Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manipro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Manipro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Monday, August the 1st, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. In fact, just visit us on Facebook right now. Go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other backyard poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. All you have to do is scroll down a little bit on that homepage if you're listening live right now. Just scroll down a little bit. You'll already be in the chat room as a guest, so you can watch, but you can't participate. If you take a moment and click on register, that'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, talk about our hobby and passion, backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, preparedness, and a whole lot more. I would also like, while you're there at Blog Talk Radio, to mark this show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manipro.
Manipro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Manipro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Manipro. Nurturing life.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at EggCartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com. If you're looking for a unique gift idea for that dog, cat, horse, or chicken lover, then look no further than HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a wide selection of gifts for both the home and farm. My favorite is the chicken noodle soup with noodles shaped like chickens. I'm sure you'll find everything you're looking for at HobbyHillFarm.com. That's HobbyHillFarm.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry. With the Chicken Whisperer, it is now time to bring on my wonderful co-host.
Hey, Whisper, what's this? You're yawning in the chat room. I hear this yawn. Oh, so tired. Baby cakes, what got you so tired? Were you partying and playing all weekend?
Not necessarily. I did do a good bit of work around the house, but I don't know why. It just all of a sudden hit me this morning. I woke up. I woke up and I was a little like, oh, man, it felt like I was down for 10 minutes and had stuff to do, though. Got up and took care of it, and I ran a few errands. And, boy, while I was out running errands, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. So, but nonetheless, I'm back. We're live, and we have a great show lined up for everybody today. But other than just hanging out and working around the house, that was about all we did this weekend. How about yourself?
Yeah, well, that's enough. That in itself, plus this heat. I slept quite a bit of the weekend myself.
Don't rub it in
like
now.
You, it just seemed like I was drained. I think the heat took its toll, and there was some. I had a very interesting weekend, and I think I just needed to kind of go to level or just check out to kind of deal with it. I had a really, really great weekend, but serendipity happened. Yep. Ran into a friend that was walking his dog, and we realized that we hadn't seen another friend that lives about an hour away for quite a long time. So I said, well, let's just call and see if we can just connect and go over and visit on Saturday, because he had to take his car in to the same, you know, close by. So we did that, and when we made the call, our friend said, by the way, I've got cancer. I said, oh, okay, well, it's not, you know, it's not the serious thing it used to be. So anyway, so we go trucking over there and meet around 1 o'clock-ish and walk in, and it was been about 9 months since we'd seen, I'll just say it's Jim. His name is Jim. We walk in, and he's laying on the couch, and he's lost easily 50 pounds, maybe more. He's just looking very thin, but had good color. And he says, well, I've got – we said, how are you? And very cheerfully, he said, I've got colon cancer, and I'm dying, but it's okay. kind of thing. And we're going, whoa, we didn't expect that. And so we spent the next hour and a half or so – talking about life and death and transitions. We kind of ended up calling it graduation. And it wasn't morose. It wasn't, you know, beat my breast and pull my hair and whine and moan and groan. It was just really a matter of sort of maybe it's time, maybe it's not. He's going to see if he can't do some alternative things to get himself back up. But he handled it with such dignity and such grace. It set me to thinking, well, that's really a role model. Where he's not much older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So came back afterwards and just kind of put me in a little bit of a thoughtful melancholy, but not melancholy, but saying, you know, gee, you know, if I knew I had 6 months, what would my bucket list change to? What would it really look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I spent quite a bit of time just kind of thinking about my life Saturday and Sunday and just saying, well, what really is important if I graduate? in 3 to 6 months, what would really be? So he said then that, and what was interesting too, because the happy thing is we just signed up for hospice. And, of course, his friend is taking care of him, and that's a big relief, so there's an outlet. And he was just so at peace with the whole process. And I thought, way to go, Jim. You've done your homework, and you've done your footwork. So I'm going to go back seeing him sometime in the next week or so. But it's time, it's good for us to take that pause, I think, and just really start to think, what is really important in life? Is it watching that TV show, or is it petting the cat? Is it saying you love someone, knowing that you might not see him again? I mean, these little things make a big, big difference. So that was kind of my weekend. I didn't see that one coming either, but there it was. Yeah. So that's probably why I caught up in my sleep. I was between meditating and contemplating and analyzing and just sort of viewing myself and my own mortality. It's when your friends start going. Of course, I lost a really good friend in high school, and that was sort of my first sort of close to death outside of family that was a peer. So anyway, that was my weekend. How about you? I mean, I know you said you're working on the house and everything.
Yeah, that
bonding,
was pretty
bonding
much
with Caleb. You got
absolutely. Oh yeah, that was fun on the Facebook. Yeah, it was. I'm always having fun. I forget. Let me get over here to Facebook because I did have some. I said something like letting Jen take a nap. Wondering what Caleb and I can do, but to stay out of trouble at the same time.
Are you guys getting into trouble already? did you go get those camouflage diapers? You were talking about going to the...
Oh, the one,
we got
those last week. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Taking over so Jen can take a nap. What can the boys do that won't get them in too much trouble? Tractor ride?
Tractor ride,
maybe fishing, and I put, I know, we're going to practice up on our slingshot skills. Get your slingshot.
Oh, no.
We're hanging out in the woods.
Oh, dear. So,
absolutely. So, raise.
I remember getting in trouble with a slingshot. I got spanked. I mean, it was corporal punishment for my slingshot antics, and I deserved it, really. Looking back, I didn't seem so at the time, but looking back, I did.
Oh,
very vivid memory.
Well, I've got some very interesting chickens in the news, so we'll move right along to that. Let everybody know that every day our Chickens in the News is brought to you by Meyer Hatchery up in Polk, Ohio. Since 1985, Meyer Hatchery in Polk, Ohio has been a family-owned and operated business. Meyer Hatchery is a year-round hatchery that offers over 160 breeds of poultry, including chickens, ducks, geese, turkeys, guineas, peafowl, and game birds, plus a full line of feed and supplies. Just need a few baby chicks? No problem. Meyer Hatchery will ship as few as 3 baby chicks. Check them out online at MeyerHatchery.com. That's MeyerHatchery.com. All righty, let me get over here. I had posted a couple of them to my Facebook page, one that I haven't. And you can get all this Chickens in the News. We post a lot throughout the day that comes across the news wire at our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. So let me scroll down here a little bit. Let's see. Here we go. Here's the first one I want to read. Great information. This comes to us from The Sun. This comes to us from The Sun from across the pond in the UK. And the title is wonderful. 700,000 Brits now keep chickens. How about that? 700,000 Brits now keep chickens. This is by Vince Sudden. Nearly 700,000 Brits now keep chickens, a rise of 80% in 3 years, figures reveal. The largest increase in poultry rearing since World War II has come as households try to cut grocery bills by producing their own eggs. Ryan Mott of Birdseed Suppliers Naturals Grub said, "We're seeing a return to 50 years ago when it was usual to keep half a dozen chickens in the backyard. Over the past few years, more Brits have started growing their own fruit and vegetables, and the next step seems to be having their own eggs. The figures by the British Hen Welfare Trust has helped push the value of the coop industry to $1 billion a year. Tesco said sales of poultry pens had nearly doubled since 2008. They sell chicken coops in the Tesco Direct catalog. The store's Corbett said, "The surge in demand for chickens and coops shows how keeping hens has become a hobby for many." And there you go. That's across the pond. 700,000 Brits are now keeping chickens. So I posted that one. See what else.
And in just 3 years, I mean, that is an astronomic increase, 80%. I like that article. That's a great article.
Now, I posted this one for everybody as well, a little bit different here. You just got to read between the lines, really. And a study is just that, a study. You've heard me say on this many a times, back when I used to teach life-saving skills to doctors and nurses and the public, I would say study is just that, a study. You know, for example, orange juice has been proven to prevent certain types of cancer. Study paid for by Minute Maid. So study is just that. But here's one. Yeah. This comes to us from Mother Jones. Some of you may not like the people who run Mother Jones, but nonetheless, it's chickens in the news, and so I'm going to report on it. Here's the title, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
Will chickens give your kids cancer?
No.
Yep. You heard it. Will chickens give your kids cancer? By Kyra Butler. Last week, researchers from New Zealand published a paper that showed that kids raised on livestock farms had an elevated risk of developing blood cancers like leukemia and lymphoma later in life. It didn't take long for the news of this finding to make it around the world. On Friday, an MSN Health News headline proclaimed, "Growing up near livestock tied to blood cancers." Whoa now, I thought near livestock? Plenty of people grow up in the general vicinity of farms, and given the growing popularity of urban agriculture, even city kids could be exposed to livestock on their very own block. But before you forbid your kids to visit the petting zoo, let's take a closer look at the study. The researchers analyzed death certificates for more than 100,000 New Zealanders between the ages of 35 and 85 from 1998 to 2003. Cross-referencing cause of death with parents' occupation. So if the deceased person had a parent who was, say, a poultry farmer, the researchers took that to mean that the person grew up on a poultry farm. The team found that subjects whose parents were livestock farmers were 22% more likely than those whose parents weren't farmers to develop blood cancer as adults. The finding was especially pronounced among children of poultry farmers whose blood cancer rate was three times of that of their non-farm kid peers. So, how to explain the connection? The researchers' hypothesis that exposure to animal viruses during childhood might be to blame, making people more vulnerable to blood cancers later in life. But I wondered whether the researchers had considered the effects of pesticides, antibiotics, and other chemicals. Andrea Manchi, a lead researcher on the study, explained that her team had looked at an animal farming separately from crop farming, since crop farms generally use more pesticides. They found an increased cancer risk for growing up on animal farms, but for not growing up on crop farms. This suggests that pesticides exposure cannot explain this observed pattern for growing up on a farm, she said. She also admits, though, that livestock operations aren't always chemical-free, and unfortunately, the death certificates proved The death certificates provided no information on which kind of chemicals and medicines each farm used or in what quantity. In fact, the researchers didn't have a clue about the size or kind of operation each subject was exposed to, giant factory farm or tiny mom-and-pop operation. No one knows, given that the headline claimed that growing up near livestock leads to cancer looks awfully vague. Still, despite the limitations, there's a lot to pay attention to in this study. For example, growing evidence suggests that kids raised on farms are less prone than non-farm kids to asthma, allergies, and other conditions involving the immune system. Some studies have found that people who suffer from these conditions are actually less likely to develop cancer than non-allergic people. One explanation for this, as the paper notes, is that allergic conditions may enhance the ability of the immune system to detect and eliminate malignant cells. It'd be interesting to look at childhood farm exposure and cancer rates in the developing world, where asthma and allergies are much higher than the U.S. So I'm going to let y'all read. There's probably another a paragraph or two on this, and it's on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. And Will Chickens Give Your Kids Cancer? Very interesting article there. And then I have one more fairly short one that a good friend, Olivia Grant, posted on our Facebook page. A little alarming. It talks about government control and how we've just really got out of hand here in America with government control and just everything else. This comes to us from The Blaze, and it's talked, Agenda 21 update, family farms are under attack. Is the U.S. government starting to implement the policies of the United Nations Plan for Global Management of People and Resources, known as Agenda 21? The latest efforts out of the Department of Transportation seems to indicate this is happening, and they are starting by targeting America's farming communities with costly and oppressive regulations. In late May, the Department of Transportation proposed a rule change for farm equipment. And if this is allowed to take effect, it will place significant regulatory pressure on small farms and family farms all across America, costing them thousands of dollars and possibly forcing many of them out of business. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. How many doggone programs do we need in Washington? No wonder we're in this debt mess. Part of the Department of Transportation, they want new standards that would require all farmers and everyone on the farm to obtain a CDL, commercial driver's license, in order to operate any farming equipment. The agency is going to accomplish this by reclassifying all farm vehicles and implements as commercial motor vehicles. And this is a lengthy article, and you can read some of the details here. But that's pretty amazing. That's just pretty crazy. Again, more government outrage and government out of control here. But that's just the first paragraph. If you want to get more angry, keep a reading. But I'll post this on our Facebook page here during the show. I have not yet, but I will here during the show and get that posted on our Facebook page. Just follow us on Facebook. 12,390 as of today there on Facebook, and you can become 12,391 by going to facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. You got any chickens in the news, Pat?
Well, I do. This one is pretty interesting because of the ramifications, Whisper, that can come out about it. And what has happened is there are chicken plants closing in two North Carolina cities. And these I'm just going to read part of it. This was written by David Bracken, and it comes to us from New Observer. Siler City, that's not too far from you, is it? Siler City up in North Carolina?
Yeah,
maybe a couple hours, but they had pinned a lot of hope on Ukrainian businessmen's, I'm not sure I'm going to say this right, but it's Bakahop, but yeah, something like that. So I'm just going to call him the Ukrainian businessman. It's Oleg Bakhmatyuk. Anyway, he took over the Townsend chicken processing plant earlier in 2011, earlier this year. But what happened is just recently he decided to, just Friday, to shut them down. He bought them and decided he's just going to shut them down. This is going to lay off more than 1,000 workers in both Siler City and Moxville. And it also, here's the thing, just closing these plants, it terminates contracts. These guys had contracts with about 200 chicken farmers in four counties. and it brings an abrupt end to an investment that was viewed as a lifeline. I mean, we're talking about a lifeline to the state's poultry industry. North Carolina is already struggling with an unemployment rate about 9.9%, and now it's going to go up even higher. It says they were looking for a savior because they were in trouble before the Ukrainian bought these companies, and they thought that this would help save them because it would keep the chicken business going. But a peer, he paid, listen to this whisper, he paid just 5 months ago almost $25 million to buy the Townsend's North Carolina assets out of bankruptcy. So they were going down the tubes anyway. Okay.
Huh?
Yeah, and what they did is he was going to try to bring cost cuttings, ramp up exports of dark meat, which fetches a higher price outside the U.S. And the Ukrainian's only 36 years old, this billionaire Ukrainian, but he decided it just wasn't worth it. He decided to take his losses and go on. And this is according to David Pirtle, who's a former Tyson Foods executive, who was hired to take it over. He said, quote, "This is important, I think, because it could affect all the food, all poultry plants. He just didn't like the environment in this country and the lack of discipline that the poultry industry has." I mean, isn't that a statement?
Absolutely.
There's a lot of background sound coming through a little bit, Whisper. He said the U.S. poultry industry has been resisting calls to reduce production levels, something many would be necessary to put it on firmer footing. But what happens is, and not only that, but he had spent $7 million upgrading one of the plants, and he decided, I'm just out of here, I'm going to take the losses. So it filters down to the city government, which was selling them water, about $5 million worth of water a year. So that's a big loss to their city government. There goes their revenues. He says the company employs about 550 people around Siler City. That includes two feed mills and a hatchery. And there's another 476. So there's another 1,000 people out of employment. And they're going to expect to be closed down by October 4th. So everyone has their pink slips already. But here's what happens with the chicken farmers. Those farmers, Whisper, they, in anticipation of these contracts that they expected for the last years, excuse me a minute, they took out loans. They took out big loans to build
mm-hmm.
chicken houses
yeah.
and, of course, to buy their chicks. And the farmers, they expected it. The farmers, they've got to pay that debt off. So it's going to affect almost 200 growers. I mean, they have a debt probably anywhere from $250,000 to $400,000. And those monies are going to have to be paid back, but where they're going to do it. So there's probably going to be about a lot of bankruptcies with those contract farmers. Now, here's the other part of it. The pieces all come together because, of course, it's a system that's affecting the entire world. It's not just North Carolina here. It says the U.S. poultry industry is struggling. We've known that. The cost of corn, which is the main ingredient in chicken feed, has doubled. It's doubled over the last year, while chicken prices remain weak. I think that's going to shift because there's one click article after this is a follow-on to this. He says the entire cost structure of the poultry industry is based on corn being priced at $3 to $5 a bushel, and it's almost $7 a bushel now. Okay, so when it starts to getting above that $5 a bushel, that's when they can't make any money. They're just treading water. And, of course, at the $7 a bushel, it's a slow train wreck just kind of waiting to happen. It says corn prices are expected to go even higher with the drought situations that we're having in the Midwest and, of course, the federal government subsidizing farmers to grow corn for ethanol.
Mm.
Ethanol. Pilgrim's Pride, who's the second largest chicken producer in the U.S., recorded a $128 million loss on the second quarter, and it's planning to close a plant in Dallas. So now we're affecting Texas. And so given all the challenges that the industry is facing, it wasn't surprising that the Ukrainian decided to call it quits here in the U.S. anyway. And finally, it says if we have another year or two like this, it's going to drive everybody out of business, and most of the businesses will probably go to Mexico and somewhere in South America where labor and costs are cheaper. How about that?
Hmm. Wonderful.
Hmm. Well, that's so interesting coming along with your article about 700,000 Brits keep chickens up 80%. I mean, it looks like there's at least internationally a chicken migration that's happening from the farms to backyards. I mean, that's 700,000. So, and if they each have six a family flock of six, that's 3.2 million chickens in the Britain in family flocks. So anyway, the other thing, if we've got time, is a real brief one here. I wanted to link it. Wherein this comes to us from India now, and we're at where are we here? In Lahore, India, where chicken meat is selling at record high prices. And we had an article on this earlier this week, but it's apparently getting increasingly more intense. This just came through today. And what they're saying is market prices have gone up over 50% for poultry. And the poultry products are being smuggled to Afghanistan, Iran, and other neighboring countries for a high profit. So they're produced in India, and then they get better prices, so they're being smuggled out. And, of course, that's raising the local prices because there's a shortage. And in Lahore, or in India, they usually set the chicken price, so there's a black market now going on for chicken. Yeah, who would have thought? Chicken's become a form of a commodity, almost a form of cash here, which we've seen, of course, in the Depression and in other days. And they're just saying a lot of people, they could have chicken maybe two or three times a week. They could afford that, but now they can't even afford the two to three times because it's doubled. It's gotten so high. And he says basically they're saying that the All Pakistan Poultry Association, a former president, said that some 22% of the birds perished on every poultry farm owing to the high humid condition and the long spells of power outages. So here we've got the other side where the climate is again affecting the poultry houses because they can't keep the power going. It's so hot that chickens are just keeling over. And he's saying that most owners have simply closed their farms because of the heavy losses. So they're expecting chicken prices to go up because of a shortage. And as soon as the weather improves, they won't have so many losses. So all kinds of really interesting things are happening at the macroeconomic level with respect to chickens, which is probably the world's most premier meat source around the world. It seems like more people eat chicken probably than any other meat.
I think you're probably correct on that, sure.
Yeah. So how's that for sort of weaving in Brits with Ukraine, with North Carolina, and then over to India, all on the same subject of chickens?
Yeah, absolutely. Getting a good job there. Oh, my goodness.
Well, interesting times. Yeah.
It's interesting with the corporate taxes. Everybody thinks, you know, corporations don't pay taxes. But you remember when Daimler Chrysler, when Mercedes bought Chrysler way back when to try to help with that, they moved their headquarters back to Germany because of the taxes they would have saved. So even though Chrysler was still, I guess, American-made car and car company, at that point, Mercedes bought Chrysler. This is just a few years ago. People remember this. And they moved their headquarters back to Germany because of the money that they would save just on taxes alone. So,
that's right.
You know, it's just pretty nutty how all that pans out. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Pat. We're going to go to a commercial break. Pat, I'll let you run this commercial, if you will. I've got to take care of something here on the back deck. And then, and once we get started with our good friend Peter Brown, then I'll go and take care of that. He took a little detour. So, no problem. So, we're going to go to commercial break, but when we come back, today is August 1st, which means we're very proud to have Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply. He will be joining us every single Monday here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And today we have a great topic, the digestive system. And we're going to kind of split this up this Monday and next Monday because it is so extensive, and we want to make sure we get lots of information out there. So, again, I've told you this a million times. Get that spiral notebook out. Go ahead and get ready to take notes. Because we do have the experts every day on this radio show, they want to share their knowledge, and today is no exception. So get that spiral notebook out. Get ready to take some notes after the break on the digestive system. System with our good friend Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. So hang with us, folks. We'll be back right after this short break.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Looking for an all-natural way to keep your flock healthy from intestinal parasites? Tired of wasting all those eggs due to a long withdrawal period? The answer is Vermex. With no artificial chemicals, Vermex has been a huge success for many species, offering a completely natural way to address intestinal hygiene control and improve general health. Check out the online store at www.vermexusa.com, vermxusa.com, to see what products you need to keep your animals healthy. Vermex, natural control of intestinal parasites.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size flock and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And it is now time to bring on our guest today and every Monday, Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of First State Vet Supply himself. Welcome, Peter.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you very much.
Good.
So glad to have
hey,
you.
Hey, Peter. Yeah. Welcome to the show again.
Yeah, I listened as I was in the queue. I was listening to the tail end of the conversation. I guess it's some Ukrainian guy bought the Townsend's deal down in probably Statesville or someplace down there.
Right.
But the poultry industry just needs to shake itself out, just like any other industry. And I live here right where the original Townsend Farms came to life many, many years ago. And originally Townsend Farms was from Millsboro, Delaware. And it's an interesting thing. The father, Press Townsend, who was the original owner, when Press died, he had given it to his son. His son inherited it, and his son destroyed it.
Oh, my.
It was once said that if you started out and at the home office in Millsboro, which was right on a major highway, you could walk from there all the way to the beach, which is the ocean here, and never step off Townsend land. But by the time the son got done with it, there was nothing left. Everything was mortgaged to the hilt. He had bought that operation down in the Carolinas against the advice of his managers and management team that he sent down there years ago to look at it. Bought a place up. Bought a place up in Pennsylvania, did the same thing, bought it because he wanted it. It's one of those things where the son comes in and tries to outdo the father. I met Press Townsend once in my life, and quite an individual, and he was looking out over a fleet of brand-new Kenworth 10-wheeler trucks that were the tractors for pulling feed trucks and so on. And I didn't actually know him until he introduced himself to me, and I was looking out the window at these trucks, waiting to see somebody else at the main office. And he asked me if I liked those trucks, and I said, yeah. I said, a lot of iron. He said, well, let me tell you something. He said, all of that iron is paid for.
And oh, okay.
You know, and they can't say that today because the original Townsend Farm was bought out by Mount Air, which now owns that entire complex over there. But it's a dynamic industry that those who don't change in that industry, whether they come from outside this country or they're here for many, many years, are doomed to fail, and I'll explain why. One of the reasons that Mount Air is able to survive over there is that they not only buy soybeans, but they have a soybean plant. So that allows them to make mm-hmm. soybean meal, which is the other staple of a poultry diet. And then they're able to sell the oil as well. Same thing for Purdue Farms. You don't hear them, you know, they cry like crazy when the poultry prices aren't good. But if you saw Purdue's operation and you saw Mount Air's operation, you would understand. Now, on the flip side of that, just recently here, Allen's Family Foods and Allen's Hatchery, which is up here in Seaford, Delaware, about 20 miles from where I'm talking to you,
mm-hmm.
they've been in business since 1919, and they just went belly up.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
$85 million in the hole, blaming it on corn and soybeans and everything else. But really, when you come right down to it, old management, too set in their ways. No diversification. They've got a feed mill, but they don't make their own soybean meal, so they have to buy everything. In actuality, corn. Well, you know, I just looked at corn prices here last Friday. Over at the Purdue complex where people can bring their truckloads of corn in and sell it. It was, I believe, $7.85 a bushel, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Back in the days when chickens were going good and they were making tons and tons of money, you're probably looking at $2.53. So it's kind of gone up a lot, no question, but soybeans was the one that amazed me because soybeans were always hung around $4 or $5 a bushel. It got to $5.50. Everybody got excited and planted soybeans. They were $14.85, and that's almost triple the price. So
$14.85 a bushel for soybeans.
$14.85 a bushel. I wish I had my whole yard planted in them. Not very much
wow.
would have come out of it, but I mean, hey, money's money. But $14.85, and
wow.
All across the country, if you look at things, you're seeing things change. People out west. You know, and I know this is way off topic, but I just thought I'd throw this all out there because it's not just the price of chicken. Purdue Farms does very well over here. And like I said, they cry, but they just put up a huge solar project out here on the highway for everybody to see. There are probably more mirrors and smoke and, hey, we're good guys in the environment and everything else, but by the same token, it doesn't come free. And I'm sure there's some tax write-off from our friends at the federal government and everything else. So it's a big dynamic. If you don't change, see, one of the problems with Allen Family Foods, they sold a lot of whole chickens. How many people out there can actually say they go to the supermarket and they look for a whole chicken? Not too many today.
Mm-hmm.
it may be in rural areas, those that don't grow their own chickens may go and look for the whole chicken because it's cheaper. But most people are looking for the breast meat. That's why nationwide there's a backlog of dark meat. The dark meat gets stored in freezer lockers all over the country. And so that's a lot more to it from my perspective, having, been in that industry and been around it for the last 35 years. There's a lot more to it. If they don't change, they will be out of business because these guys play hardball,
Yeah, sounds like it.
They do. And why is chicken, I heard you mention that, most people around the world eat chicken. Where can you grow 100,000 chickens in such a small, confined space and put it out the door real cheap and in the end, depending on how you feel about it, have it be wholesome and worth eating? It's just the way it is. It feeds the masses of the world, and it's going to get more and more expensive. Red meat prices are off the wall, and our government isn't helping anybody by subsidizing the ethanol thing. Now, I'll tell you one thing that I read the other day. I don't know the exact numbers. Doesn't really matter. But this 2011 will be the first year that more corn will go into ethanol than goes into animal feed stuff and other products.
I heard about that.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's 40% of all the corn produced will now be going into
That's pretty damn scary when you think about it because
it's crazy.
You can't diversify enough crops. I mean, some people grow some sorghum around here. There's some barley grown and that kind of stuff. But even if you go out to the Midwest, it was called the breadbasket of the world. We fed the world with our cheap wheat. Not going to happen anymore because wheat is very tough to grow. It's subject to all kinds of disease problems. If it gets too wet, good hail and windstorm will beat your wheat to death. And once it lays down on the ground, it's almost impossible to harvest. So you'll find that a lot of folks out that way now getting out of wheat, going to soybeans and corn. Because you can make some money with it, and it's easier to manage. There are soybean processing plants that are put up there. If you look at Purdue, how diversified they are here, they have a huge soybean processing plant not too far from where I'm talking to you. And you just sit down there one day for about an hour and watch all the trucks roll out of there with the soybean oil going out for your salad dressing. That's what they basically use it for. And then they turn around, they sell the soybean meal, and that's sold basically on how much protein content it has, usually about 44%, depending on the day that it's made. So it's an interesting, dynamic, diverse business, and if you don't change, you won't be around very long. That doesn't matter who they are and how big they are. Purdue is into everything. They have turkeys. They buy and sell grain, and they export grain. They're very, very well diversified. And they've got very deep pockets, privately held company. So, anyway, that's not what we came here to talk about. I thought it was interesting you were talking about it, so I just thought I'd throw a few things in there. This is how it works in that particular segment of the market. But anyway, we're here to talk about the bird's chicken's digestive system.
Right. Hey, Peter, just one more add-on to that, though, which I thought was just so interesting. Did you hear the part about 700,000 Brits are keeping backyard chickens, and that's increased 80% over 3 years? So it's like chickens are migrating to backyards, at least in England.
Yeah,
700,000 Brits.
Yeah, and they have a different perspective on it than we do here. I don't think their rules, regulations, and everything. You're going to see things get tougher here in this country too. Eggs have always been cheap.
Way cheap, too cheap.
Yeah, and while you're going to see them go up now with the new cage regulations and everything else, that means every chicken farm in this country will eventually have to take out the cages that are in their chicken houses now. And put in these new cages that will house less chickens, so that means we have to build more chicken houses. So the expense of making this conversion to appease the Humane Society, basically, that's why it was done, is going to cost you, the consumer. Whether you consume store-bought eggs, that's up to you, but the majority of people probably do that at this point. And there's no question.
Peter, what's your position on the caged versus the free-range? do you think the caged birds are, I mean, do you have a position on it? It's quite a hot subject.
Yeah, and people may not like my position on it. I look at it this way. You can't feed the world, and you can't feed the population. If you go back in history and you look at the biggest downfall of every great empire, there was always agriculture was at the base, and when the agriculture failed, so did the empire. Okay.
Yep. That's right.
Yeah. If we keep exporting, and people don't realize it, and we keep exporting more and more of our poultry, cattle, and whatever jobs out of the country, and that's where it's going. You know, we will have no markets left for ourselves, and things will cost so much here. You can't grow chickens in your backyard as cheap as Purdue and Holly Farms
and the rest of these
Tyson and stuff. You can't do it. Can you grow a better chicken? You bet your boots you can. You can grow one that's got what you would consider better flavor because of what you're feeding it and the free-range aspect of it. I mean, why does venison taste like it tastes? Because of what the animal eats. When you're eating what they eat, it comes out in the meat. I mean, there's no question. If you want to change your chicken and have it taste like fish today, just feed it high levels of fish meal, and you'll find out real quick.
So, I mean,
So I look at it a little bit differently. I kind of look at them as being bred and used for a particular purpose. Now, mm-hmm. I will tell you this, after having spent a significant amount of time in that particular industry, that a grower who does not treat his birds properly, which means letting them run out of feed and water, not taking sick birds out and that kind of thing, not going to be around very long. They're just not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't survive. That you can't. This business is not buku profit in it, like people might think. It just is not. The losses on the other end, the mortality, the catastrophic things that can happen to a flock that you don't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have a little bit, a different thing. When you've got four, five, six birds in a cage. It has been all researched out. This is the optimal square inches per bird. Is it maybe a little bit uncomfortable? Maybe, but it can't be grossly uncomfortable because they won't perform. They won't lay. There's a whole bunch of things that, that you can stick to it. Now, a lot of people will disagree and everything else, but you can't have it. You can't have it the way you want it. You can't have 100,000 chickens running loose everywhere. The predation alone will just take you to the cleaners. The cost of feed, the feed wasted. You go into these big poultry operators, you go into one that's really well run, and you'll see the big difference. And then you go to one that's run poorly, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't pick out your mortality every day, that can be a problem, not only to the birds that are in there, but it can stop up feeders, it can interfere with the manure removal system.
Yep.
If it's done right, is there some discomfort for the bird? I'd be a big ass liar if I said no. But look, we were born with the bigger brains, and that's the way it goes. I don't mean to be crude about it, but that's my position on it. It's they are there to serve us at this point in time. Now, if you want to make every chicken in the world a backyard chicken, it's just not going to happen.
No.
Somehow, you can extrapolate this out any way you want. Does that mean eating an ear of corn that doesn't have the same feelings that a chicken has? I mean, is that what we want to equate it all to? I mean, corn. Well, I don't know either. We take the corn, we grind it up, and we feed it to the chickens. How fair is that? I did one of my research papers in college on feeding cow manure back to chickens.
And
vice versa, because
what did you find for that?
Well, chicken can tolerate about 20% of cow manure in its feed, and a cow about right around the same percentage. If you get too much in it, they'll back off of it. But there's just technically nothing wrong with it because the chicken, as we get into this digestive system here today, you find out it's a very simple thing, and a lot of nutrients don't get absorbed, and they get defecated out into the droppings. The droppings are very, very
rich.
That's why part of the reason that's why a chicken eats their own droppings. They're not stupid. I mean, I've never thought a chicken was stupid. And, you know, most people, if they knew my true feelings, most people are stupid. I'll take chicken any day. Well, I mean, a lot of people that know me really, really well know that's exactly how I feel, you know. But at the end of the day, it's all about feeding people worldwide and keeping, you know, agriculture going. And I know there's people out there in the chat room everywhere else in the world that hear me that will disagree with what I got to say, and that's fine. Everybody has an opinion. But mine is based more on, in my opinion, on fact and how you go about doing all these things. So,
Peter, do you think that, and I've heard this many times before, that Americans eat way too much protein because it's meat, far, far more than is nutritionally needed. Do you think there'll be a shift maybe in our diets towards less protein?
No, in actuality, I think we eat too much carbohydrate. We eat too much pasta, too much bread, myself included. And, you know, bread and carbohydrates are not my friend. I'm hypoglycemic. So if I get into too much candy or too much pancake syrup and stuff like that, about 2 hours later, if I don't eat something, I'm in trouble. I get so bad if I let this go on occasion, even just not eating. When I get into doing a project and I'm really into it and I let myself go, having eaten maybe at 7 o'clock or so in the morning, and I let myself go till about 2 o'clock, I start to sweat, and I start to shake, and then I lose my eyesight.
That's serious.
Oh, yeah.
That's serious. Now, how is this relating to the total American diet, though, about eating too much protein? And you said, of course, we eat too many carbs, which is absolutely right.
It needs to be balanced.
So
it needs to be balanced. There's no question that overeating protein will do kidney damage to on the human side.
Oh, seriously?
Yep.
I mean, really seriously?
Yes, it will
gout is on the rise in the U.S. As well. We're even seeing younger people having it.
Right.
Of course, that's related to the rich diet.
Yeah, I'm supposed to lean more to the protein side than the carbohydrate side. I've tried to balance it over the years, and as I've gotten older, I've gotten lazy with it. And
you left out the vegetable side, Peter. It's not just carbs or protein. There's a big, huge thing in here called vegetables. You know, that's has good glycemic index. Anyway, we are off topic. I think this would be another good topic to talk about in a future show.
Well, we could pick something like Friday, the fifth Monday of the month here. I should be on five times this month. So, if you want to save it for the 29th, that's fine. We can kick it around a little bit and so on. But getting on with the digestive system, I would suspect that most people that are rearing chickens today don't consider the chicken's mouth part of the digestive system, when in fact the mouth is probably one of the primary systems of the bird's digestive system. The mouth obviously comprises basically of most what most people think of as the tongue, and right behind the tongue and in the floor of the mouth is the glottis, and that big giant hole at the back, that's the esophagus, and that's where all the food goes. When a bird is eating or drinking, the glottis opens and closes accordingly, and sometimes when you hear a bird squeak a little bit, that means that the glottis probably didn't close as food or water was going by and a little bit got in, and they have that little squeak and stuff to try to clear it out. But there are salivary glands in a bird's mouth, in case you didn't know it. They are in the cleft and around the cleft at the top of the roof of the mouth. They are in the lower mandible and base floor of the bird's mouth and on the tongue. And it's here where the first basic enzyme is added to the bird's food and helps the bird to swallow the food and moisten it to some degree. So, you know, why am I talking about the mouth? Well, there's a couple of conditions that birds can get that can damage the salivary glands in the bird's mouth, and left unchecked, these two diseases that I'll mention can and will impair the ability of the salivary glands in the future then to put the proper amounts of digestive enzyme on the food. And those two diseases would be wet pox, and the other one that comes to mind real easily would be canker. So it's important that if you have a bird with wet pox and you intend to save that bird, to try to get rid of those lesions in the mouth as quickly as possible. And by putting just straight iodine with a Q-tip on those lesions should help dry them up and get rid of them, and hopefully won't not have damaged the salivary glands too badly. The other one is canker, caused by a protozoa, very easily spread through the drinking water from bird to bird. One more reason why you should sanitize your drinking water on a regular basis. The canker looks like an orange to orange-yellow, can be soft, can be hard, depends on how long it's been in place, but they look like little buttons, little spots and specks. They grow anywhere along the edges of the beak and the bottom of the floor of the mouth of the bird. They also grow on the roof. They can make their way up through the nasal cleft and out into the eye sockets.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it gets left uncontrolled. You know, it can grow anywhere, down the back of the throat. There is a visceral form that will grow in the body cavity. Very, very bad disease to have. So you want to make sure that you don't have canker or anything like that. I would... on some sort of a regular basis, when you're out and about and you're picking up birds in the yard, most people know their birds by sight, which one is which. Pick up each bird every now and then, just give them a quick look, the eyes, the nostrils, open the mouth a little bit, just give it a quick look, see if anything's going on, put them back down, and rotate what birds you pick up on a daily basis. If you pick up two or three today, don't pick up the same three tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just keep an eye on those kind of things. The canker can also be somewhat controlled until you get some medication with application of iodine directly to the lesions that will appear in the mouth and elsewhere.
But it's a protozoa that's causing this, right, Peter? So should there be an anti-protozoa given? Like,
yeah, the ones that you would give for coccidiosis, which is also a protozoa, will not work, the sulfa drugs, the Ampril, and that type of medication. So what we use is the metronidazole. On the human side, you'd know it as Flagyl.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would give that to control these lesions in the mouth. And usually for the average bird, if you got a real small Bantam bird or a real young bird, about a half of a 250-milligram tablet per day. Larger birds can easily withstand 250 milligrams a day. Give a quarter of a tablet to a pigeon, okay, just to give you an idea.
A quarter to pigeon, okay.
Yeah, and pigeons are big carriers of it. It's a huge, huge problem in the pigeon racing industry. They treat for it on a weekly basis.
Okay. Peter, there's a question in the chat room about sanitizing the water system. What do you recommend for that?
Well, I think anybody that knows me knows I'm going to say Oxine.
I know. And
because it's labeled to do what it does, and it does a good job, it builds no resistance to any organism because it works by changing the pH. It's readily available, comes with complete directions. And not only that, it can be used for so many other things that we've talked about before. The flushing of eyes, the flushing of nostrils, the spraying over top of the birds. I mean, I can't think of anything that if your hands are tied and you go to your medicine cabinet and you haven't got anything to medicate your birds with, but you got a bottle of Oxine hanging around, you can at least do something, and you can do it then until you do get some medication. So it's a great way of controlling outbreaks of disease to some extent anyway. until you can get your hands on the proper medication.
Yeah, so, there's another question there. Peter, are you in the chat room by chance?
No, I'm not.
Okay, you're not in the chat room. Well, there's a question. It's a little off topic, but it's curious about how to kill odor in the coop and the run. They're using the PDZ, but it still stinks. And the wood floor, they have a wooden floor that is waterproofed. Wooden nest boxes that are waterproofed also.
Yeah, I would probably try the product made by Digestive Enzymes out of Wisconsin. And I do believe I have it on my website, a 33-ounce bottle or so, runs about $18.95. And that's an enzyme-based, so you're not using any real chemicals. Enzymes are basically a type of protein. We find them in the digestive system as well. But they're considered they take a lot of action on things and kind of digest things, I guess, in a sense, if you want to put it that way. They've been known to be called biochemical digesters. So they will take the ammonia, because that's probably basically what you're starting to smell. And last week when we talked about eye problems, we did talk about ammonia burn, which used to be very common in your commercial poultry houses, but which they have now addressed by top dressing their built up manure system that they use, and it's way less of a problem now than it used to be 10, 15 years ago. But that's what I would consider trying, something along those lines, and see how it works. It's not overly expensive. That way, if it doesn't work the way you'd like it to, I would. The other thing you can do with the run, if the run itself is just dirt, I would suggest using the hydrated lime.
Yes, good.
Because that will change the pH, and that should change the pH drastically. It lowers it dramatically, so that should it'll make it so that nothing lives there either, and it's an inexpensive way, and it should take care of that odor as well. And you can probably find that at any farm operation store that sells fertilizer and seed and stuff to any farmer. Any co-op should more than likely have it. Drawback to it, can't let the birds stand on it. It can cause burns on the bottom of the feet. So, I would, put it on, work it in, and then let the birds out. Sometimes you can work it in with a little bit of water, but the problem with doing that ends up being muddy, and then you got to wait for it to dry out.
Would you put like some thick mulch, like some hay and grass clippings and that sort of thing, work the lime in a little bit, and then put a bunch of organic matter on top of it?
I don't know. I certainly wouldn't put hay.
Straw, wood chips.
Some wood chips, but you want to get things that are going to be able to absorb moisture, because moisture is where it's at. The heat and the moisture, and then the bacteria that's in the droppings and stuff start that that smell that nobody wants. So I would look to get things instead of wood chips, maybe something along the lines of a sawdust, but not dusty dust. See, here what they use is in the poultry houses, they call it sawdust, but it's not. There are sawmills here who take logs from the woods and then break them down into to the raw cut boards, and they use that, which seems to work for them pretty well here.
So they're pretty moist. They're moisture. Or is that, are they dried shavings?
They're as they come from the mill. They've got some moisture to them. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Another just quick question is the hydrated lime, it's the same as agricultural lime, right?
In my estimation, it is. It is not the same lime that you would put on your lawn. So if that's what somebody wants to sell you, keep walking. Wrong stuff.
Okay.
And some places they call it hydrated lime, some call it agricultural lime, and some call it burnt lime. Just depends on where you live and what they've called it over the years. I also understand that it is a pickling lime, so that you might even hear it called because that evidently when you pickle things, you got to lower the pH in order to get the what you want on the outside into the inside of the pickle. I know nothing about pickling, so anybody doesn't like what I said, forgive me. I'm ignorant on it, for sure.
Well, then there's just one more question with this, Peter, as a follow-on, is that takes care of outside the coop using the hydrated line. What about inside the coop to take care of the odor?
If you want to put it down at the base of the, in other words, under all of the litter, put down maybe an eighth of an inch coating of your hydrated lime and then put your fresh litter on top of that. I don't see that as being a problem, that at least anything that leaches down would be hopefully neutralized by the hydrated lime that would be on the bottom of that. It's a battle trying to keep the litter dry. I would suggest on a weekly basis at least, maybe more, taking out spots that are wet, where birds have spilled water, things of that nature. I would take that out, put fresh litter in its place right away, because if you can keep it, if you can keep it from getting out of control in the first place, then you'll not really have that much of a problem with it. But usually the places that start to stink are where they're roosting, and you could clean that out on a daily basis too.
Mm-hmm.
And then around your feeders and waters, the feeders can get the moldy feed around it, and things like that. So I would look to make those adjustments in my poultry house.
Okay. They're also suggested in the chat room to maybe use a sodium bicarbonate, bicarb soda, the Arm & Hammer thing.
Yeah.
That would certainly change the pH.
It would cost. I've never done it, and I've never heard of anybody doing it, but I don't think it can hurt. I don't think it's overly expensive to buy a big box of it in the store.
No, you can even buy a big bag of it in some of the wholesale stores.
Yeah, it certainly wouldn't hurt trying it, that's for sure.
Okay. Okay. Well, listen, Peter, it's time just to take a quick sponsor's break. The time, it's gone by so fast, my goodness. So I got to tell you, I've got 5 pages of notes here right now. So today we're talking with Peter Brown. He's the chicken doctor, and we're talking about digestive tract situations and health care for your birds. And we'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned, folks.
First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com.
Hey ladies, do you have a hard time finding the perfect gift for that animal lover on your list? I did, but not anymore. I shop at HobbyHillFarm.com. They have a great selection of dog, cat, horse, and chicken gifts that are not only cute, but affordable too. Check them out at HobbyHillFarm.com and become a Facebook fan at Facebook.com/HobbyHillFarm to receive updates on new products and special discounts. I just know you're going to love HobbyHillFarm.com. I do.
If you have experienced the disappointment of broken or weak eggshells, try MannaPro's Oyster Shell. Adding oyster shell to your flock's feeding program helps provide the calcium they need for strong eggshells. So don't let those beautiful eggs go to waste. Try MannaPro's Oyster Shell for your pullets and layers.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor.
At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
All righty. Welcome back to the Chicken Whisperer Talk Show. Our special guest today is Peter Brown. He's the chicken doctor from First State Vet Supply, and we are talking about digestive tracts in chickens. And, Peter, would you tell us about your special deal when folks buy a product from First State?
Yeah, if you have a question about a particular problem or a disease or whatever, you can give me a call, and I charge $25 for a consultation. You're not obligated to buy anything at all. If you decide that what I'm suggesting might help in your mind, then the $25 consultation fee is waived. And most of those that have called me know that I very rarely even charge the fee. If I can't help you, or I don't think in my mind that I've helped you sufficiently to warrant having to pay me $25, then I waive the fee as well. So it's a very, very flexible program, and I dare say that very few people get charged the $25 whether they buy or they don't. I just don't care to have people call me who have bought things elsewhere and then want to know how to use it that I don't do, and then you will owe me $25. But it's not about the money. It just isn't about the money at all. I really don't care about the money end of it. It has to do with the amount of time that I spend doing these things and come up empty-handed. That's basically it.
And I know some people just want to sort of pick your brain and be spoon-fed, and will take a lot of time.
Yeah, it all goes back to what I said before. Give me a human, give me a chicken, give me the chicken. You can take the human. I'll take the chicken anytime. So that's
well, it depends on the human, Peter.
Yeah, it does.
All humans are not necessarily chicken equivalent.
I say that tongue in cheek as well. So chickens are pretty. And I think most people in the chat room will agree. Chickens are pretty damn good, pretty smart.
Yeah.
And a whole lot of fun. And being have the lousiest day you could have, and come home and sit and watch the chicken scratch around in the yard and carry a feather around, everybody chasing him for no good reason at all other than he's got the feather. And so he puts it down, somebody else picks it up, or she picks it up and runs with it and whatever. So it's very comical, very soothing to the soul.
They are. They're little, it's like little Prozacs in feathers, aren't they?
There you go. Hey, that's a good term for them. I got to keep that one in mind. that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right. Antidepressants, feathered antidepressants. Mine are always making me laugh. I mean, it's just uncanny. And I've heard that from other stories. You know, and we're gonna, this would be a good show too. They're using chickens as therapy chickens in the like detention centers and in rehab centers. So that,
yep.
But that's another whole conversation. So.
Yep. Well, anyway, moving on from the mouth. So we've moved through the mouth. We understand what goes on there. Very little digestion there, and then we move on to the crop.
Mm-hmm.
And the crop can be one of the worst things you've ever seen. If you get trouble in the crop, the bird's getting crop bound or too much medication and things of that nature, and the crop ends up being filled with air and gets a fungal infection in it and so on and so forth. So the food goes through the mouth, picks up the digestive enzymes that are there, which are basically just to make it moist enough for the bird to swallow it. The food then goes into the crop. The crop being just a big holding tank. The crop basically
mm-hmm.
was designed by nature for birds that can't really go out in the open for long, long periods of time and would be their way of foraging and storing food as they go, not having to worry about digesting it and carrying it around and chewing it and what have you. So it goes into the crop, and there it sits. Now,
mm-hmm.
There's no digestion takes place basically in the crop. Okay, there may be some more enzymes that are added, but they're added to make it easier for the feed then to make its way. From the crop on out. So what you basically have here, so why do we have these problems with crop-bound birds? Well, it depends on what they're eating. If you've got birds that are free-ranging, most of us know that birds will eat anything. So
mm-hmm.
I have seen birds that have had crops with pieces of string in them. I've seen them with buttons. I've seen them with pieces of glass. I've seen them with rocks that are too big that won't pass. And I had a client here not too long ago whose bird consumed a mouse.
Ah, there was just a question in the chat room about mice. Why are chickens so crazy about mice?
I don't know why. I honestly do not have an answer.
I'll go
to
after
that. It may be the fact that it is moving, and it draws their attention. But why they eat it, I haven't the slightest idea.
In one big gulp.
especially if they get onto a nest of pinks. You know, they're tiny, they're tender, mm-hmm. they're pliable. But anyway, this bird, and I haven't heard the outcome from the client either, but I didn't find out till the tail end of it that the bird had consumed a mouse. But this bird had an infection going in the crop and everything else, and we took some Nystat and got rid of that, but we still couldn't get but soft foods to go through. So my feeling is that there were probably some bones from this mouse that were clogging up the ability of any hard feed, any other type of feed other than liquid stuff to go through.
Right.
And,
now the gizzard then, or the crop, when it's stuck like that, that can really jam it up. Something that's not digestible, like plastic or certainly metal or.
Yeah.
Thick bones, gets caught there, huh?
Let me say this to people, and I want to make it perfectly clear. Adding grit to a bird's crop that is impacted is ludicrous.
Oh, dear. That makes sense.
It's making the situation worse. It does not help the bird. There is nothing going to take that grit and break up what's in that crop. Nothing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All you're doing is adding more agony to the situation. So when you first get a bird that's crop bound, and one of the issues that I suggest to people, as soon as you notice it, take the bird, put it in a cage where it has access to no food of any kind other than what you give it. No bedding, no no paper in the floor of it, nothing. You want to give the bird plenty of fresh water. That you want to do, okay? At your earliest convenience, take the bird, take a syringe, fill the crop up with as much water as you dare, and very vigorously try to break up and feel what's in that crop. Don't be afraid of it. You're not gonna hurt it. It's just a expandable bag. It's kind of like blowing up a football or a basketball. Okay. So when you've got that crop, take it and grab a hold of it and pull on it and work it and find what's in there and see if you can break it up. Then let the bird sit for 24 hours, plenty of fresh water to drink, and then examine the droppings. If the bird doesn't drop out, you've got to try to do something else. The next thing to do after that is to take that bird, fill the crop back up with water, and you may need somebody to help you do this part of it, but you're going to take that bird, as soon as you've got all the water in it, you're going to flip it upside down, hold its mouth open, its neck extended straight out, and the other person is going to work that crop vigorously and try to force out what's in there. Birds do not have the ability to throw up, okay? There is no valve, there is no flap of skin, there's nothing to hold food in the crop. When you see a bird that has just consumed a large amount of water and they start to walk around and water runs out of their mouth, tank's full. That's all. The tank's full. Mm-hmm. They're not throwing up. Now, can they move their head and their neck and posture their body so what's in there comes up to some degree? Yes. But it's not an actual act like you and I, where we have tremendous musculature in our body cavity that will force out what's in our gut and up through the mouth and out. Excuse me. Now, on the flip side of that, you can take a bird that's consumed a lot of water and hold it upside down, and you can't empty it out to prove the point. There is nothing there to hold that into.
It's just straight flow, isn't it?
Exactly. Okay. And so now that's what goes on in the crop. And if you still can't, after several times of trying to flush this out, if you still can't get the material out of that crop, You're limited then as to what your next step is, and that would probably be to open the crop up and take out what's in there.
How do you do that? Then you mean do a surgery on the neck?
Yeah, probably. From my perspective, what I would do, I would get a hold of the crop. I would pull some feathers out, maybe a half inch wide. I would look for an area that does not appear to have any veins. And I would make a small incision with a scalpel or other sharp, very sharp instrument. Be prepared for bleeding. Be prepared to sew it back up. You can use thread and a needle. Okay, I'd use a curved needle. I used to carry sutures on my online store, but I don't anymore because they're dated. And once they reach the expiration date, I've got to throw them out, and it's no point. They're not worth anything to anybody, so we don't do that anymore. But open it up and put the water right in there and just keep flushing it out and get out everything you can. You can even possibly look inside with a small focus beam flashlight and see what you can see. Now.
Wow.
Peter,
we've just got about 2 minutes left. So
okay.
It always happens that we run out of time with you. But if we could just wrap it up a little bit, and I think I'd like to have this crop suit. Surgery may be covered again because
next Monday we can start out with that, and we'll try to stay on subject, and I'll take you right through where the food goes from
that.
The crop, what else can cause it. If the crop isn't the problem, what else could cause it, and what you may or may not be able to do there, and so on and so forth, and take it right till the feed comes out the back end.
Great, yeah, and there are always questions about diarrhea. That's a never-ending kind of thing. Okay, Peter, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Special guest today. Yeah, go ahead.
This is my pleasure.
Yeah. Oh well, my pleasure. Again, my hands almost cramped from taking notes. I might re-listen to this one. So our special guest today is Peter Brown. He's the chicken doctor of First State Vet Supply. First State Vet Supply, and I'll post that in the. In the newsroom there. Tomorrow we have a very special guest. It's Frank Reese, and I don't know anyone that knows more about chickens and poultry than Frank Reese. He's going to talk with us about our obese chickens making us fat. That's the topic for tomorrow, is our obese chickens making us fat. batch. Frank Reese. So we'll cover that tomorrow. Oh, you poultry pioneers, you know we love you guys all so much. And Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, is on. He's going to be peeking in and out of his vacation. So we'll he'll sometimes come on if he can, and otherwise he's going to be on that beach probably with his he doesn't have his bibs on, but he might. You never know about Andy. So Andy Schneider, the Chicken Whisperer, I'm Pat Foreman. And, of course, you know we love you poultry pioneers so much, so very, very much. And we want to thank blogtalkradio.com for providing the radio, the chat, and the video services. Blessings to all. We love you all so much. And may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a lickin'.